I don't know that people do this, but I've always been a naturally curious person. I live in the world of stories.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Maura Sweeney is a keynote speaker, writer, and podcaster. As the ambassador of happiness for the UNESCO Center for Peace, Maura Sweeney inspires audiences to lead happy, authentic lives. She speaks at national leadership conferences, universities, and American embassy outposts. Maura co-hosted the State of Happiness radio show and has been a featured guest on more than 400 media outlets. Maura Sweeney. I'm so sorry.
Not to worry. You don't know what people have done with that name because it's not very common.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There is a Sweeney. Is it a play or?
Sweeney Todd, which I never saw. I think it was a musical.
Yes.
And I think it was very dark. I think it was like comedy, but dark.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, that's the last name, and Maura first name. It's however you would say Laura, L-A-U-R-A.
Yeah.
With the Laura.
Okay. I'm happy to have you, Ambassador of Happiness. Oh my goodness. This is going to be very exciting. Keynote speaker. Is that a keynote speaker? Inspirational speaker? Yeah. Okay. So Maura, tell us, how did you find yourself on this path of being an ambassador of happiness?
Well, how about if I told you it was in me from before I even started school? It really was. Mm. I just had this heart and this desire to meet up with everybody. You know, there's a lot of people like they like staying with their own. They like their own neighborhood. They like only their family, only their cousins, or only their group.
Yeah.
Well, for some reason, when I was small, I had this vision and it never left me. I would look at airplanes in the sky. And I would imagine them going around the world. And when I would, in my little mind of 4 years old, I would think of all the different cultures around the world where people, this is back, I'm dating myself, but you know when you think about all the different cultures, people dressing all different ways, like people from Holland wearing their wooden shoes, the clogs, and people from China wearing their little coolie hats.
You know what this reminds me of, Maura? I was like, I watch a lot of classic film, and they sometimes between movies, they'll show these, they're called travel logs, and it's narrated by John Fitzpatrick. And he would, and this is in the 50s, and he would travel around the world, and you would see all these different cultures and, you know, in their cultural dress. And so when you mentioned the people in Holland, I could clearly.
You could see it.
Yeah, that's exactly what he did.
I just wrote his name down. I'm going to look him up. Well, you know, I thought you were going to go to like Disney when it's a small world.
Oh, that too. Yeah.
Because that was literally in my mind. It's like I wanted to meet these people as if they were my unmet friends and relatives. So when you think about happiness, I think that was your original question. I went way off already, Ebony.
But no, that's good.
But I wanted to meet the world. And for me, I didn't see the world as a nasty or unkind or unfriendly place or even a dangerous place. There was something in me that I wanted to connect with the hearts and souls of everybody. And I wanted to learn about them. And I think from that point of view, I was always this person who would be like this fuchsia. I don't know why. We're talking to writers now.
Yeah.
But I want you to imagine a ribbon that looked like fuchsia. You know the color fuchsia? It's beautiful, like magenta. It's between pink, purple. And I, to this day, I see myself as this fuchsia ribbon that goes in and out of every different environment, meeting all kinds of people, young and old, from every background, every religion, every culture. And I'm that person. You know, it's funny, the world we live in always wants to divide and make people afraid. And that's what this world has been. And that's why I believe the world is so often disempowered, discouraged, disappointed, depressed, and afraid. Mm-hmm. And they're always almost in that fight or flight. And it doesn't mean that I haven't been through plenty of scary places in my own life, but I am this other element no matter what I'm doing. So if I'm speaking here or overseas, if I'm writing, doing blogs, doing podcasts, or just at the grocery store, literally, I'm one of those people, if I can't connect with somebody, I will go to the grocery store and interact with perfect strangers. But I'm always that person who's sharing something that reminds people of how we're alike, not how we're different.
Okay.
And what unites us rather than what divides us. So that's a long answer to your question, but does it kind of put things in context? So what I am and what I do today is really who I was at four.
Okay. So it's this love of people and love of connection and pointing out the similarities rather than focusing on the differences that you had since you were 4 years old, this feeling of love and connection for people.
Yeah, it's exactly right. Exactly. Somebody's got to do it, Ebony.
So when you were a child, what, you know how when we're kids, we think, I want to be a firefighter. I want to be a whatever. What did you want to be?
I wanted to travel. Now, this is interesting, and this probably gets in between the happiness and the unhappiness. I wanted to travel the world and make new friends. Now, think about that. And I'll give you one other thing, which goes right into what we're talking about today. Mm-hmm. I grew up right outside of New York City. And I don't know if people are going to be watching me on video, but you could tell I'm in my 60s. Yes. So I'm dating myself. But growing up, my family had me on this path. I was supposed to be an attorney living up in New Jersey, like my grandfather was. And so I could remember going to my grandparents' house, and attached to their home back in the day was my grandfather's office. Mm-hmm. So I would go to the house, and then I would go into the office area, and I would sit among his clients, and a lot of them were criminals. And I remember asking him back in the day, do you have a gun? Do you have a gun? And he would think, well, you know, I used to watch Superman and all these shows that criminals always had a gun.
Yeah, yeah.
But you would think, and even my grandfather was a colorful man, but rather than my being attracted to the law, even though I love the idea of governments and good foundations, my defining childhood experience that helped launch me into where I am today was at 4 years old, sitting beside his legal secretary, who was definitely old school. She wore, you know, the cat eye glasses. She had a suit on. She used to work in New York City. And you know, she was just always so perfect. And she was very old school. And she would pull out of the desk this old Royal typewriter. She didn't even want an electric one back then. Mm. And I would watch her typing, and I'd literally be sitting right next to her. She was very good to me. And I would see her put in multiple pieces of paper into the same typewriter with blue papers. And I would say, Mildred, what are you doing? And why do you have all these papers? And this is what she said, Ebony. And I hope everybody listening today will hear this, because it was such an infusion of inspiration for me. And she said, Maura, we're writing down words that are going out on multiple pieces of paper. And she said, we're going to hand these documents out, which are words and ideas that people are going to read and talk about and think about and maybe change their minds about. Wow. Now, something hit me in that moment, Ebony. I mean, when I tell you, I was absolutely fascinated by this old typewriter, but it wasn't just that. It's like, what's going on here? I couldn't read and I couldn't write it for. Mm. And yet I said to myself, oh my gosh, this is what I want to do. I want to have ideas that I could put out that people will be talking about, new ideas, and they will share with each other and they will change their minds.
Right. Yeah.
That never left me. And here's the funny thing. I went all the way through university. I was a political science major. I even worked as an intern for Senator Ted Kennedy. I had an opportunity for a full-time job there. Went to law school, was taking out student loans to please what I thought would be my family's desire for me. And I was halfway through, literally like on the other side of the halfway mark. And Ebony, one day, I couldn't get out of my chair to go to school. All I thought about is, oh my gosh, the light within me. Another thing for any author to think about, any writer, the light within me that was all that childhood expectation, everything I was planning for, everything I wanted to do. And all I could see in front of me was this long tunnel in a career that I had no passion for.
Mm.
And back then, if you went to law school and didn't practice, you really looked like a flunky. So, I mean, that would have been 40 years living up in New Jersey, a place I didn't want to live, doing something I had no call for. And I remember one day I couldn't get out of my chair to go to school. My body absolutely refused to get me to where I needed to go because it was like carrying a heavy load. Mm-hmm. So that kind of tells you everything. And so here I am. I never did anything really in the media. I worked in corporate life after I left law school. I raised a daughter. I helped my husband build a business. I loved being in leadership in corporate where I could hire and train and develop staff and create great working cultures that worked so well. And then when I was in my 50s and my daughter was ready to go to college and I didn't want to go back to corporate, and my husband and I, the business we were in, it really was profitable but didn't have any, what would you say, any purpose to it. I thought, what am I going to do? And that was when I took all of my life travels, which I did a lot of, and experiences and observations and my own learning, and I literally started writing. And then thought, let me be that idea person.
So what were you writing?
Now this is crazy. My trademark title that I got from speaking at Nelson Mandela Day celebrations was the Ambassador of Happiness, but my first ever blog was called, of all things, Tombstones. Now you think, what does an ambassador of happiness do with tombstones? And this might be funny. Do you ever find yourself at a point in life where you're at a place of change? Mm-hmm. You know, you can't do what you used to do, but you don't know where you're going. Well, I happened to be in bed one night and I was tossing and turning, couldn't sleep, but I was laughing about a story I heard about my husband's grandfather who I never met. And I always loved knowing about people. Now, he was a man that emigrated from Poland, and he probably spoke broken English when he moved to the States. And I said, well, what can you tell me about him? Mm-hmm. And I remember my mother-in-law only had one memory. And it was that he would get white button-down shirts at Christmas time, take them out of the box, and wear them to church, wrinkles and all. And I'm thinking, tell me this is all you could remember about your father. You've got to remember something else. And so I'm up in bed. I'm laughing to myself thinking, what kind of a life is this? How do I want to die? How do I want people to remember me? And I thought, well, if I can't go to sleep, I might as well come downstairs and start writing. And so I wrote my first blog called It Tombstones, thinking about the end of life. How do we want to be remembered? It was it was comical. And that was what got me. And I started writing, and it was sort of like comedic things about life. And I just wrote what was coming to me. And then I would share it with girlfriends. And they said, gee, Moore, I didn't know you had such a sense of humor, or that you saw life this way. And everywhere I could, Ebony, and we're going back like almost a decade, I would find places online where they were looking for people to submit stories. I did things for midlife women who were in the state of change. Yeah. I had for several years my own column on Huffington Post before they disbanded that program. And so what I would do is I would find things that were of interest to me that always dealt with these things of the heart, the things that would lift the human spirit that others could relate to. And I was basically doing what made me happy. And so that's it. And then from there, I just, every outlet I had, whether it was in writing books, blogs, speaking, doing podcasts, doing interviews. I've probably been interviewed maybe now 500 times. I have no idea. But I am an idea person. And everywhere I go, I want to encourage people to go and be who they're meant to be, to do what they're meant to do. Because a lot of us live the opposite way. We do what we're told, which may not be authentic. And so we keep replicating the same world rather than bringing out the brighter world that's inside everybody, that's like literally their gift of themselves to the world.
How can someone, first of all, why is it important that we cultivate happiness in our lives? Because there are a lot of people who think, when they think of happiness, they think of like laughter and being silly, and it's just like you could be doing more important things. So why is it important to cultivate happiness?
Okay, that's a good question. In fact, believe it or not, I am usually so serious, but yet I focus it on happiness because I know what the opposite is. And I know there are some people, they think that happiness is actually frivolous. Like, oh, this is a person that doesn't have much depth. But I will tell you that I lived many years kind of in the opposite place. I told you I wanted to travel the world, but I had a mother who was afraid of going outside. And so basically I was trapped in the house. I would be in pajamas in the afternoon at 4:30, watching friends out in the neighborhood in our cul-de-sac play, and I'd be crying at the door. I was put into a lot of these places where I felt like I was either contained, constrained, wearing the wrong clothes, being, let's say, conformed or groomed for something that was not me. So I have to tell you, I felt very much like a victim, and I used to cry a lot. As a child, my grandmother used to say, "Maura, I'm going to start calling you Waterworks because every time I look at you, you're crying." And so the short answer to why to focus in on happiness is because if you've lived in the opposite place, which would be sadness, sorrow, victimhood, then life is not with you. So to think about the opposite of that, to think about good thoughts rather than, thoughts that put you in a place without hope, is so much more inspiring and empowering. And if you want to live, you want to be thinking about those things that say to you, "Yes, I can." Yes, I'm going to open that door. Yes, I'm going to try something new. Yes, there was something I always wanted to do in my past. I'm going to give it a whirl. And as we do those things, the energy, the new ideas, the creative thoughts that come out of us are just amazing. And then I found that out even in my corporate life. It is so much better to say, "How can we?" rather than, "Oh, I can't." And you have to train yourself for it. But I will tell you, if you can change your thoughts going from, let's say, a victim mentality to the world is happening to me. Everything, I am their victim. I'm their martyr. If you can exchange that for thoughts of, "Oh, you know what? I'm going through something right now that's challenging. It feels like a big problem," or "I don't like what so-and-so just said about me." It could be anything, but "I am a beneficiary in this. I'm going to find a way out. I'm going to learn resiliency. I'm going to get wise. I'm going to be more creative." If you could choose in every case, Ebony, to have the mindset of being a beneficiary, which, you know, the root of that, bene, is good, then not only is it going to work out well for you, but the backdrop of everything in your world is also going to be brighter and happier and more expansive. And so that is a lengthy answer as to why it is worthwhile to focus in on happiness, because life and growth, I want you to think about springtime. You know, like what happens in spring? You got new growth everywhere. Colors come out. The sun comes out. You could take off a lot of your heavy garments, and you can enjoy the birds that are in the sky, you know, the smells in the air. And it's just, it puts everyone in a better state of consciousness. And what I learned from that, and this would be from my 10 years of corporate leadership life, is that when you choose that, then the outcomes are always better and brighter, and they're more pleasing.
Okay. Yeah. So I like how you say, think of yourself as a beneficiary rather than a victim, or always look for the opportunities in this challenge, right? Yeah. Because if you look for the opportunities, that will totally put you in a different mindset. Where if you're always in the victim mindset, it's like you're trapped in that. Yes. Space of,
you're right. And then, you know, the only one that could get you out of it is you.
Right.
That's why you might as well choose to be a beneficiary and choose a happier thought rather than the victim thought. Do you know what, since we are talking about writers, can I even share, because you reminded me of something, this whole idea of, you know, choosing to do something. I told you about my life. I was supposed to be this attorney. So basically I was always wearing, you know, turtlenecks, and I just looked like I was a future lawyer or future banker. And to me, that was very boring. And I was much more like creative. Okay. So when I was really young, I wanted to learn how to dance. And that was not on the table for me. So instead, I remember my mother saying, "No, you're going to learn how to play the piano." It was all classical music. I had zero interest. I was probably a terrible pianist, you know, because I just didn't want to do it. But as I got older, I was always working. I was always either in school, working hard. Then I thought I was too old. I never learned how to dance. But I think I mentioned to you, I was a homeschooling mom. We have a daughter. And she liked to dance, and she was always dancing. So she happened to have been in junior college at the time. And she called me one day, and she said, "Mom, they have a class here on intro to jazz." And I said, "Really? Are you going to be signing up?" And she said, "Mom, why would I sign up? I've had 7 years of dance. You're going to sign up." And it was just a local college. Now, what do you think the thought was in my head? Ebony, I'm like, I'm too old. Oh. And I was always told I was uncoordinated. But listen to this, the way this story worked out, pursuing something you thought you couldn't do and how it became a gateway to writing. So I don't want to be a mother to my daughter that says I can't, because I don't want to be a role model to her that says you can't, especially as you're getting older. So she could read my thoughts, and she said, "Mom, this is not going to be about 5-year-olds and tutus." She said, "This is going to be adults, so you can do it. Go ahead." So wouldn't you know, Ebony, I signed up for my first intro to jazz class. And I was just, if you talk about a fish out of water, I wasn't just bad. I was awful. People didn't laugh with me. They laughed at me. And the thing is, I never gave up. I kept going back and back and back. I'd be driving home sometimes, and sometimes I'd be laughing in the car. Other times, I'm telling you, I almost wanted to cry thinking, can I be this dumb? Can I be this uncoordinated? I can't even get what's going on. So I actually went in 2 performances, and they had some really good dancers at this school. And I remember the first performance, I almost ruined the whole thing, which was unbelievable. I just blacked out, and I had no idea this 11-minute dance I was supposed to be doing. I was terrible, but rebounded. And I went a second time. So my daughter at this point now, I did this for a couple of years. She's now up in Boston at university. And I called her one day. I said, "Kaylee, you're not going to believe this." I said, "I did my second performance. I said, I got through it without any hitches." And I said, "Well, aren't you glad?" And she laughed. And she said, no, she didn't laugh. She said, "Well, Mom, I always knew you could." And I said, "Why?" Now, listen to this. If you're a writer, she said, "Because it was something you wanted to do." And you always wanted to. And she said, "You're wanting to do it was the very way you got there." Now, would you believe today people see me after I've had like 4 years, who knows how many hours worth of lessons. I've done so many things. They'll look at me and they'll sometimes say to me, "Oh, are you the dance instructor? Oh, you're such a natural." And I want to laugh because I was so pathetic. Here's what it did for my writing. I mentioned at the beginning of this interview how I had done things previously, and then how did I begin to write? Well, I was writing little small things, but once I finished with my dance, not that I ever finished with it, I continued,
right. But
I thought, you know what? I'm going to write a story about exiting the comfort zone, the things that we, you know, we get comfortable in, and then we want to really try out a dream we had or something that we were interested in, and we're going to go through the process. Well, I wrote a book in my Art of Happiness series. It was the first one, and I called it Exiting the Comfort Zone, Dance or Die. And it read like a bad episode of I Love Lucy, because you come with me through all the episodes. It's like, oh my gosh, I don't know whether to laugh or cry for this lady, you know? And it had some reflective questions. But guess what? That one book ended up getting me on I don't know how many interview shows, because everybody has a comfort zone they're in because they're stuck in it. And yet that one book people have read, and they said to me, and it's a short book, they said, "You know, Maura, I got finished reading that and I thought, I think I could run for president." Could you learn how to dance? I could do anything. To do with people's ages. It's a universal thing. We all get stuck. We all see ourselves this way, but not that way. But maybe there's something inside of us that really is looking for expression, looking for growth. And I bring people in all of my stories on that kind of a journey to say, you know, if I could do it, you could do anything, because I was not good. Trust me.
Oh, that's a great story, Maura. Oh my gosh. That you wanted to dance as a kid, never really happened. And then when you become an adult, you feel too old. Your daughter's totally. No, do this. And it ends up becoming a book, or it leads to a book. That's just that's a great story. And you know what it reminded me of? I don't know if I'm saying her name properly, but she's the writer of like Grey's Anatomy, not the real book Grey's Anatomy, but the TV series. Is it Shonda Rhimes? Shonda Rhimes. She does all those ABC sitcoms. But she wrote this book a few years ago called like The Power of Yes or Say Yes or A Year of Saying Yes.
Okay.
Where she was, she dedicated 1 year of her life to saying yes to opportunities that she would normally just say no, things that she was typically scared of or thought she didn't have the time to explore. And it completely changed her view of life and her life, because when she started saying yes to all these opportunities, that would lead to another opportunity or an insight, or would help her personal growth, her spiritual growth. And I read that book, and it's amazing how things that I would normally say no to because I'm scared that I'm going to fail or I just can't do this, when I try it, even if it doesn't turn out like I wanted it to, just that experience gives me a little bit more confidence.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah. I'm so glad you even mentioned the word scared or afraid to fail. Yeah. I'm telling you, I was so bad. I failed my dance classes twice. And I was a good student, you know, but in this case, I was just terrible. But Ebony, you're so right. Because see, that's what we do. We get conformed into this place that says, if we can't do it well, then we can't do it at all. Yeah. Or if we're not going to excel, then we can't even try. And yet it's by the trying and the practicing. And as you said, the saying yes, the opening the doors. See, you open the doors and then your life just ends up growing. And you're absolutely right about the things that happen within us, because we gain in confidence. We gain even in character. We gain in empathy for others. I mean, think about how often we can all, every single one of us, be very judgmental. Let's say I'm good writing, but I'm not good in science. Mm-hmm. And I want to use my standard of, oh, I'm so good here, and look down at you, because you who might be good in science are not good in writing. But if we exchange and step out of our comfort zones and say yes to some of those things that might open us up to something new, the amount of energy, strength, confidence, and then there's more to it. It's almost like we fill up ourselves in ways that we hadn't before, because we're actually discovering more about ourselves. We're energizing ourselves from within. And then the more of that we do, the more brightly we shine for everybody else. Right. And then everybody else, whether we speak to them about it or not, they sense within us like, oh, I think I'm going to try something new. I think I'm going to say yes to something new. I think it's okay to grow. I think it's okay to try something new. I'm going to open up a few new doors. And really, it is so energizing to us as individuals, but it's energizing to everybody else around us. We really do need a different kind of a world and a different kind of society, because the one we're in, it's like, okay, but this is old enough. We've seen enough of it. Let's try something new. And my answer is to that, the answer is always going to be you. What are you doing in your own life to try something new, to experiment with something new, to try and fail, only to get back up again?
Yeah.
And do you know what people never realize is that whether it is writing, or let's say it's, you know, playing an instrument, or being really good in business or sales, whatever your venture might be, or even baking, I don't know, come up with anything.
Yeah.
People often assume when they see all of their favorite people on the marketplace that they started out that way. They don't realize everybody starts out with small beginnings.
Yeah.
You don't just all of a sudden, you know, come out of the womb and pop out and say, you know what? I'm a bestseller writer, or, you know, I'm the most famous in my category. They get there because they keep working it. And it's the working of it that gives them the strength and the confidence and the skills.
Yeah, I was talking with an author the other day, and we were talking about how writers compare themselves with other writers, and not just writers on their level. They compare themselves with professional writers like J.K. Rowling or Stephen King, and she said something I never thought about, but she said you're reading their final draft after many, many drafts, and you're comparing your work to their final draft, which might have been their 10th or 20th draft, right? No one gets it perfect the first time. It's writing is a process, and it takes revision and practice and time.
Exactly.
And I loved how she pointed that out, because I think a lot of writers forget that it is a process, and it's not like you're going to write something, a first draft, it's going to be stellar.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so glad you brought this up because, you know, I've also gone to a number of places where I love listening to writers. And not every writer is a speaker because they like to write. But I remember there was one that made me laugh. Can't recall his name right now, but he's quite famous. And he wrote a lot of books about Florida or about, you know, the tropical life in Florida. But you would recognize him if you heard him. And I remember him telling everybody that he is a terrible writer. He said, but I'm a good idea person. Now, remember, he's with one of the top publishers. He said, I bring them my work. And he said, it goes through a series of people and they turn it into something that's stellar. And he was really good speaking, but he wasn't as good as a writer. Right. And so people don't see all the processes that go through. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, as you said, you're right, 10, sometimes 20 rewrites. And then it's also like, it's narrowing down your topic and it's sharpening things as you go along. Right. And you're literally, it's like sculpting something. Yeah. So it does take a lot of work. And I think oftentimes we look at a finished product, we evaluate ourselves against that. Mm-hmm. And it's really that's not accurate. And then we end up sabotaging ourselves. Mm-hmm. When there may be a great story, a great message that will never get to print if you give up rather than
continue. Right. Yeah. And another thing I wanted to touch on that came up in your story and your experience is when you start to say yes to things that you would normally say no to, and you start to experience all these different things in your life, that gives you many more ideas to write about, right? I mean, you meet more people, you have more conversations, you might get something from that particular conversation you have with that person, or you have this experience and that gives you an idea. It just opens up, it widens your world, so you have a bigger pool of ideas to pull from when you start to say yes.
You know, what an excellent point. I'm so glad you brought that out because one of the things I do, and I write about this frequently because I don't know that people do this, but I've always been a naturally curious person. Yes. I live in the world of stories. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some people they write and they'll write in terms of like the 10 top things you could do. And they're very factual. I am story-based because I know that people may forget facts, but if the storyline connects with something that's in their soul and in their desire, and the storyline brings you out to a better place, then you grow and it's meaningful. Mm-hmm. So all my life, I've always loved to meet new people, as you know, and I've traveled maybe close to 70 countries right now. And it's amazing. You travel now, almost everybody everywhere speaks English. So I'm in countries where people have been brought up under entirely different cultures and governments and economic systems and even wars. And I will actually go and I'll ask them, tell me about your life. Tell me about your parents' life. What are some of the things that most Americans would never know about people in your country that you would like for them to know? And so, Ebony, in that case, and by the way, that could be overseas, but I'll find people locally that maybe moved here from another country or from a different background. And I'll say to them, do you mind if we go out for coffee? I'd love to learn about you. I'd love to learn about your life. So we can make that as let's say as universal in terms of travel around the globe as we want, but we could make it as close by as next door. If we meet someone from a different background or a different occupation and just strike something up and say, you know what, if you're an author, I'm looking for new material and I'd love to sit down with you and maybe you can inform me about your life or your career or some stories in your life that help define who you are and the way you think. And so that is a great way of opening yourself up to new ideas. And here's the thing, when people share stories, it depends on how much of, let's say, an empath you are, or even how intuitive you are. But I can find myself as people are sharing their stories. I can feel what they're feeling. I'm literally creating pictures in my mind. And it's so powerful. So sometimes we could be living in our own little box and think, well, I haven't done anything new. COVID's been going on. I've barely been out of the house. I'm not trying anything new. What am I going to write about? But you can go out for a cup of coffee somewhere, catch somebody doing something or making a remark and say, oh, you know, I hope you don't mind. I overheard you say something. Can I ask you a little bit about that? And there you begin. There you begin the process of opening yourself up to someone else's ideas and thereby opening yourself up to a treasure trove of new potential avenues for writing or for angles or for storylines or personalities, depending on what your writing is about.
Yeah, that's a great idea to just start a conversation. I mean, I guess it depends on where you live. I'm located in Los Angeles, California, and I grew up around a lot of people that were from the South, like Mississippi, Alabama, Arkansas, and they were older people, like my parents and grandparents' generation. And I remember one common theme that came up in their conversations, having been transplanted from the South to LA, was that people in LA just were not as friendly. They said, people walk down the street out here and no one says hi to each other. But in down South, you walk down the street, everyone says hi. And I would think about it and I said, oh, that's really interesting because... Yeah, these people that I grew up with, the older people, they were very talkative people and very friendly. And when you start talking to them, you learn all kinds of stuff. So many interesting stories.
It is interesting, right?
Yeah. But you just have to have that courage. I don't know what it is like about LA, but you just, I guess the courage sorry, my nose is running. The courage to say hello and just see what happens from there, because you could be talking to your next book.
You're so right. And you know what? Interesting. I could see that from Mississippi to LA. LA is a completely different scene. But I know, right, you're right. You could go to different parts of the country, different parts of the world, even different parts of the same state. And people tend to have a certain culture. Yeah. But I could tell you, so I mentioned my daughter earlier. Now, I grew up right outside of New York City in New Jersey, and there I grew up and I learned how to look without seeing people, because, you know, it was very much maybe you kind of protect yourself wherever you are. But you could see I'm quite outgoing. Right now we live in Florida, but I remember visiting with my daughter when she was up in Boston. And so we're walking around Kenmore Square, and I don't know what I was doing, but I might be stopping at a light somewhere as we're walking around. And I start talking to the other people that are waiting at the light, and I'll say hi to everybody. And my daughter said, you know, Mom, I forgot how unfriendly this area is compared to Florida. And the thing was, maybe it was not as warm as Florida is, in terms of where Florida's got a lot of people that move down, so they're happy to meet new people. But it was also a matter of how I approached people. And then the other thing too, this is maybe a hint for anybody that says, oh, you know, I'm in an area that's not so friendly. Our daughter also lived in New York, and I have been there many, many times in this city for work and other reasons. Yeah. And me, I am like the worst when it comes to getting anywhere. I love walking if I can in the city. I'll walk for miles and miles, but I could never figure out where I was going. Now, I want you to think about this. You can open the door to a conversation by something as simple enough as saying, I'm heading to such and such a place. Can you point me in the right direction? Mm. And I'm telling you, people pull out their cell phones. And this used to crack me up in New York, and perfect way of talking about how to open up a conversation. They're getting out their phones and they're getting on their Google Maps. And I would say to them, don't you live here? This is your neighborhood that you can find your way back. And so from that point, it'd be breaking the ice. And I would always, always, I've never changed. I would always look for a way to engage with someone. And the thing is, many people enjoy it. They appreciate the fact that someone asking them for advice or for a little bit of input. Mm. And it empowers other people.
Oh, that's a good point. I never thought of that. Yeah.
People. Well, I did, because I'm very bad at finding my way around. But it's a good way to tell people.
People really do appreciate being useful, I think.
They do. You know? And they appreciate that. And they also appreciate being inquired about for their opinions and observations.
Yeah.
Most people, they're so busy being told what to think that when you ask them a question, it's so freeing to them, because they get a chance to express. And then sometimes people will say to me, you know, Maura, I didn't even know I told that to anybody. I told that to you. And it might have been 20 years ago, but they're so happy to know that someone asked them. So you just kind of have to be wise about it and intuitive. Some people truly don't like other people. You could be sitting on, you know, an airline seat, and you could tell the person next to you has no intention of making any friends, and other people don't want to show up, but it's another place. You just find some little thing to talk about and see where they go.
Yeah, and that takes curiosity. I think curiosity is so valuable because I think it's the curiosity that you have that sparks the motivation to go out and talk to people. Is that this natural curiosity? Well, what is this person? What is your a typical day in your life like? Or why? What? Why do you? Why are you doing whatever? I mean, it's just the really genuinely wanting to know or understand
Yes, I like
something.
that word. It is. It's to not only know, but also to understand, because what you're doing is you're getting into their perspective, and it's freeing for them. And it also, like we all of us, we have one life to live, but we can't live everybody else's life. But hearing their stories helps us appreciate maybe why they behave the way they do, why they feel the way they do, why they think the way they do. It's very expansive to the intellect and the consciousness.
Mara, I can't believe we're almost out of time. I feel like I could just keep talking and talking and talking. But I did want to, something else that you mentioned is in writing, you really aim for finding the story so that you can connect. It's really the emotion that's conveyed through the story that helps connect to the reader versus just information and,
In my
statistics and
case.
whatever. And I think that's very powerful because I don't think that people really understand the power of their stories and how your story can connect to someone who you thought you had absolutely no, nothing in common with, right? But there's something about your experience that reminds them of their experience, and there's a connection that's made, and your story will inspire them to do something in their life that will inspire. It keeps moving
Yes.
forward, paying forward.
Yeah. Do you know, a friend of mine once said this, and I said, I hope you don't mind if I share it. She said, stories have the power to bring people from one reality to another. And information doesn't necessarily do that. It works on a different part of our brain, but a story that someone else can step into, and then let's say add their own individual details of their lives into that story, can bring them out of the story and change them into a new framework of thought, a new place of hope, a new sense of growth. It's amazing. There's literally, it's a power, and I would almost say it's a magic that comes from the telling of stories.
I think that we really like to see ourselves on the page or ourselves on the movie screen. And it's the power of seeing ourselves on that page or on the movie screen in a different context, right? So like if you really if you wanted to do something courageous in your life and you see this character on screen doing it or this character in a book, it puts you in that mindset like, oh, maybe this is possible for me, or I really this, or you're drawn to that story because you are seeing yourself in a way that you possibly never thought of seeing yourself, or in a way that you've always wanted to see yourself, and a connection is made that way too.
Very true. And there's one more thing. It's funny when you speak, you remind me of something else. There's something else that comes from stories. If you want to, let's say, convince someone of something, and you're going to give them the 10 scientific reasons as to why they should do something, they may already have an opinion, and so they may be resistant to it. But if you tell them a story, the natural intellectual or like say biased opinion goes away, because all they're doing is listening to a story. And that's how you really reach into people's hearts and souls, and how, at least in my case, you can help a person change their mind and expand their minds a little bit. And I also use a lot of reflective questions before I go into the story. So my question is actually bringing them right into the middle of it with a generalized question like, have you ever desired to do something but thought, I'm too old or it's impossible? But would you like to come with me as I tell you this tale? So they're already kind of in there, but they might be inserting the details or the desires of their own life into your story, and they're making these little exchanges along the way. And it bypasses the boundaries.
It is like what you said earlier, like stepping out of one reality into another, right? Yeah, that's great. Mara, this has been a wonderful conversation. Tell us where we can find you.
Oh, well, I have, since you have a podcast, I might as well share mine. It's my name. It's Maura Sweeney, Living Happy Inside Out. Mm-hmm. And they're probably actually helpful for any of your followers to listen to, because I start every podcast with a reflective question, offer a little information, and then usually there's a call to action at the end. But beyond that, they can find me at my website, which is Maura, my name, M as in Mary, A-U-R-A, the number 4, the letter U.com. And so my books and my public speaking are there as well.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Do you have any closing words of encouragement or wisdom for writers who are feeling stuck?
Yes, I would. If you do feel stuck, get up. You could start dancing. You could put on some music. You could run outside and get on a bicycle, smell the grass, listen to the birds, get out of where you are physically and emotionally, change your environment. And once you do that, you'll change your emotions. And once your emotions are changed, your mind and all of your thoughts and ideas go with it. The worst thing you could do is sit in front of your computer and try to do something. I've been there. I get miserable. But if you step away, try something new, and put yourself in a different environment. I happen to use things like music, dance, because it'd be something that would make me happy. Or going out and getting into nature, getting on a bicycle because it's very freeing. Or in my case, it could be going to the grocery store and talking to a lady online, you know, and help her with her groceries. Do something different that makes you feel good and literally kind of like shocks you out of whatever funk you're in. And that will do you far more good than trying to sit and eke something out when you think personally that you have nothing of inspiration or of import to write about. So I hope that helps.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you, Maura. Curiosity truly is a gift. When you are curious, you just notice more opportunities because you're curious. And I think that's just the gift of curiosity, is that it does open your eyes to all kinds of different ideas for stories, for job opportunities, for housing opportunities, for whatever. I mean, we're always surrounded by lots of options, but sometimes when we're so tuned in on our frustration, it's difficult to see all of the opportunities that surround us. So I hope that Maura has inspired you to spark up a conversation with someone that you don't know, or has inspired you to start researching or learning more about something that you don't, that you've always wanted to understand, because you never know where that's going to lead you. And speaking of leading, Maura is a leader of happiness and helping people cultivate successful lives. So please check out her website and her podcast. The links are in the show notes. You could also follow me on zazo.com, sign up for my newsletter, and you can follow me on social media, Twitter at Ebony Haywood, Instagram and Facebook at Motivation to Write. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will see you next time when I talk to another fabulous guest. Bye-bye.